I heard an expression recently that kind of caught my ear and really seemed very true to me as I heard it. Chances are you are all well aware of it and know it, have known it for some time, but I didn't remember having heard this particular phrase before. But it struck a chord, and it seemed to me to be true, and it kind of helps to put life, or the passing of life, in perspective. Like some other expressions or cliches, there are variations of it, but the version I heard and that I thought was very thoughtful is that days go slow, years go fast. It's a general statement. I know a lot of times we have days that seem to go by very quickly if we have a lot to do or if we're having a good time. But I think the point that's made by that phrase or in that statement is that days seem to kind of drag along, one day very much like the one before, but they add up quickly to the passing of time, to the passing of years. I think parents would especially relate to that as you go back and look at some of the pictures of your children when they were younger, and you think to yourself, that was yesterday. And now look how much they've changed and how much they've grown up. Now, that's a perspective that we do have as we grow older. Maybe you really need to be of a certain age, and I'm not sure just what that age is, before you begin to have that sense of nostalgia and to realize how quickly the years are passing by. Time really is a little bit like weather. We talk about it all the time, but not much we can do to change it. I'm not going to talk so much about time management today. Time management is a whole different subject, how to schedule and use time specifically. But I want to consider time in a more general sense. I want to think about how we use those days and weeks and months and years as they go by so quickly. What do we do with our lives? What do we accomplish? What do we learn? We heard about wisdom in the sermonette. And hopefully we can gain wisdom not just by blowing things up, but by hearing about people who blow things up. And we can put it in perspective and learn from our own experience as well as from others. Days go slow, years go fast. I want to be a little more specific than that this afternoon. The title I've given to the sermon is Days Go Slow, Months Go Fast. I want to use today as a benchmark. I want to use this afternoon as a starting point. Today is the last meeting of the Teen Speech Club for 2017-2018. We might think back to our first meeting of this season, which was on November the 4th, 2017, 7 months ago. Most of us would probably agree with my next question. Where did the time go? It seems like just last week that we started the season of Teen Speech Club meetings, and now we're finishing up. Where did all that time go? The days go slow, the months go fast. You know, we're nearing the halfway point of this calendar year. We've already observed the first three holy days for this year, and you've made your plans for the late summer and fall holy days. But then right after the Feast of Tabernacles, we're planning to be back for another season of Teen Speech Club, November 3rd. That's 145 days from tomorrow. 5 months. So after all those months have quickly passed, what will we have to show for that? What will we accomplish during the passing of the next 5 months? Now, God willing, we will be back together again with our returning club members and with several new members as well. Today, this evening, two of our club members will be graduating, finishing their Teen Speech Club time, their effort. But I have heard so far of at least five who will likely be joining us next fall. But I'm almost certain that on that Sabbath, on November the 3rd, 2018, I will say, if not these exact words, then something like it, "Where did the time go?" It seems like just yesterday we had the banquet to wrap up last season, and now we're starting again. Time is kind of a mysterious thing. It seems to pass quickly, it seems to pass slowly, but it always adds up. If you do an internet search on the concept of time, you'll find that there's an elaborate history of how people came to measure time. Now, according to a website called timeanddate.com, we have a seven-day week because of the ancient Babylonians. They took the 29.5-day period that was a month, the cycle of the moon, and they rounded that back to 28 days and divided that into four equal periods of time. So the week is based on the Babylonian interpretation of a month, right? Later, the Romans came along and they added the names of the day of the week, one after each of their pagan gods. Dividing the day into 24 hours seems to go back to the ancient Egyptians. Archaeologists have found sundials or shadow clocks that they used to keep track of the time that passed during the day. Now, when you do this research about why we have a seven-day week, why we have a 31-day or 30-day month, why we divide the year as we do, you find a lot of interesting information, none of it biblical. We know that God created time, that time is part of his creation. Let's look at a verse or two to remind us. Genesis chapter 1, verse 3. Genesis chapter 1, verse 3. It says that in the previous verse that the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters, and then God said, verse 3, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. Now we understand that this is a kind of a recreation, that this was the restoration of the earth to its original created form following Satan's rebellion. But God created day and night. God created the 24-hour period that we call a day. And God created the seven-day week, not the Babylonians. Genesis chapter 2, verse 1. Genesis chapter 2, verse 1. "Thus the heavens and the earth and all the hosts of them were finished. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. And he blessed the seventh day and sanctified it." God created the seven-day week. And he capped off the seven-day week with the Sabbath, which keeps everything keeps God in mind, and as we're commanded to remember the Sabbath, we remember that seven-day cycle, and we observe this day. It is interesting to consider that for all the different things that have changed, all the different things that have happened, all the different civilizations and cultures that have existed, for all the history of mankind, the seven-day week cycle has never been broken. It can't be. It is part of God's creation. We talk about the history of time a bit. You know that in Jesus' time, the day was divided into hours. I don't know exactly how they kept track of it. I don't know that they had Fitbits back then, but they kept track of the hours of the day. Turn to John. I want to look at John chapter 11, verse 9. John chapter 11, verse 9. This is just kind of a comment in passing, but it highlights something that was part of what they understood, part of their life. Jesus said in John 11, verse 9, "Are there not 12 hours in the day?" They understood that the breakdown of time, 12 hours of, roughly speaking, 12 hours of light, 12 hours of dark, as we saw back in Genesis chapter 1, the light and the dark make the day. So in Jesus' time, there was that understanding, that connection to keeping track of time in terms of hours. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 7, because when you have days, and you have weeks, and you have a moon that goes through a particular cycle, then that gives you months. And months were used to keep track of years. It's all part of what God built into our solar system, the way that the earth and the moon move through their cycles around each other, the moon around the earth around the sun. Genesis chapter 7, verse 11. In the 600th year of Noah's life. Now, first of all, how did they know it was the 600th year of his life? Because they kept track of time. They knew one year as it passed, another year began. They knew what year it was. And in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, there was a way to keep track of months as well as weeks and then years. They had a calendar. Now, I didn't go down to Hallmark to pick up your new calendar every 12 months, but there was a way to mark and keep track of time. It was part of what God, it's part of the way we're built. Our life is defined by time. Our life is limited by time. Our life is measured by time. And it's important that we understand that God expects us to carefully use the time that he created and gave to us. Ray Cummings, an American science fiction author, said that time is what keeps everything from happening all at once. Time separates. Time is a measurement. Time is how we keep track of things. We use the concept of time consistently in our everyday language. We talk about racing against time. We talk about finishing in the nick of time. Sometimes we have to bide our time, or we have time on our hands. And it's always just a matter of time. We refer to time fairly loosely. For example, how often have you said to someone, "Oh, I'll be there in a second"? How long is a second? Well, seconds don't get much respect because they pass by so quickly. But thanks to scientific advancements, we can be very precise in how we measure time. There's a website called abc.net.au, which offers the following definition of a second. Today, the standard definition for a second is 9,192,631,770 periods of the radiation corresponding to the translation between the two hypervine levels of the ground state of cesium-133 atom. Got it? Now, there will be a test, so I hope you're taking notes. That definition takes about 24 seconds to read. You know, seconds don't get much respect, even though they can be very carefully defined. But seconds do matter. You realize that when you consider the competitive races they have in events like the Olympics, which are often decided by fractions, even thousandths of a second. So there's one thing we need to be aware of. Don't scoff at this. On June 30th, 3 weeks from today, there will be a leap second time adjustment. It's been calculated that every day the Earth rotates 0.002 of a second slower. Now, to me, that explains a lot. Every day is 0.002 of a second shorter than the previous day. That's why I can't get everything done. So to compensate for this change in the rotation of the Earth, every 500 days, 1 second is added to the International Atomic Time to make an adjustment. Now, those of you here in Pittsburgh and Wheeling remember that every leap year, I complain that an extra day is added to February in the dead of winter. Why not add a day to July? But finally, when we understand the leap second, something good is going to happen at the right time of year. We all have an extra second on June the 30th, coming up in just a couple of 3 weeks. So I hope you'll give some thought to it so you can put that extra time to good use. The time is so important to us. And we know that Scripture emphasizes that time is limited. Time is precious. And God holds us responsible for time. Let's consider a couple of passages that illustrate that point. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 17. 1 Peter chapter 1. Verse 17. In this passage, Peter is emphasizing the importance for how we live, that we're to be obedient, we're to be holy because God is holy. Verse 17, he writes that if you call on the Father who without partiality judges, according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your stay here in fear. That's a pretty strong statement. We'll be judged according to the work that we accomplish in the time that God gives to us on this earth. And with that in mind, we are to conduct ourselves in fear, not in terror, but in careful, thoughtful respect for what God has given to us. To realize how serious and how important it is that we make the best possible use of our time. Because our time here during this stay or this life that God has given to us is limited. Let's go back to Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Ecclesiastes, the 11th chapter. Solomon wrote this book. We know that he also is the one who wrote and compiled the Proverbs. These are both considered books of wisdom to help us to learn those skills that we heard about in the sermonette and to make the best use of our life, the best use of our time. Here in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, let's begin in verse 9. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 9. It says, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity." The word vanity could be better translated in this case, they are temporary. Childhood and youth are temporary. Chapter 12, verse 1, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth before the difficult days come." Solomon gives some advice here, which he adds to in many ways in the book of Proverbs. But he gives some advice here to young people to, first of all, enjoy the time of their youth, but also to be aware of the responsibilities that come with it. Solomon warns us that we aren't young for very long. And once we get past that youth, we realize that we weren't young for very long. But youth is a time to treasure and to make good use of. Youth is a time to have fun, to enjoy life, to do the things that you see and that you observe and that you'd like to participate in. It's a unique time of life. When our son was about 15, we were having a conversation about the Sabbath. And he was having trouble appreciating the Sabbath. He said, "Dad, I'm 15. I don't need to rest." And that's pretty much the energy level that young people have. But Solomon here lists three reasons why we need to use the energy and enthusiasm, the ambition of youth, very carefully, very wisely. First of all, he says at the end of verse 9, God will bring you into judgment for the choices you make. God will hold us all accountable for the use of our time. And in particular, the point here is that God will hold youth accountable for the choices that are made during that period. So Solomon's advice is, look, have a great time. Enjoy being young. But stay within God's law. Stay within God's law. Verse 10, remove sorrow from your heart and put evil away from your flesh. In other words, spare yourselves the trouble that mistakes in your younger years can cause later in life. It's easy, it's possible, unless we're careful, unless we exercise wisdom and care, to make mistakes in our younger years that will cause difficulty in our later years. So Solomon is warning youth to be careful, to enjoy, but to stay within God's law. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 5 says that living within God's law protects you. There is safety within God's law. But living outside of God's law brings trouble and failure. So Solomon says, use your time carefully and wisely. Enjoy it, but remember, you're accountable for it. And finally, one other point we will emphasize is that at the end of verse 10, childhood and youth are temporary. Those younger years, the prime of life, are temporary. Someday you will grow older too. Someday those days will add up to months and then to years, and the young years of your life will have passed. There's something about time that's hard to gauge. You know, when time is in front of us, it seems to stretch out like it's not going to end. But after time passes, then we look back and realize how quickly it has gone. So Solomon has some specific words of advice, especially for the younger members, but not just teens, young adults, but it's really for all of us to remember to use the energy and the health that we have carefully and wisely. James chapter 4, verse 14. James 4, verse 14. This is quite an image, quite a word picture. He's talking about being careful when you make your plans because you don't really know that you'll be able to accomplish what you want to. But in verse 14, James asks this rhetorical question, "What is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away." I think about that statement, that thought, in the morning when I'm having my coffee. Nice hot cup of coffee, steaming just a little bit, and this vapor rises up off the coffee, and in about 3 inches, in about 2 seconds, it's gone. It's like mist across a lake on a summer morning. When the sun comes up, it burns it all off so very quickly. In the Psalms, life is compared to grass that flourishes for a day and then withers away. Now, all that sounds negative. I don't mean to have a negative approach here this afternoon. What the point of these passages is not to be concerned and worried about life being so short, but it's a matter of emphasizing the importance of using our time properly. Using the time that we do have is the emphasis that these passages carry. But life does pass very quickly, and that those wonderful youthful days of energy and strong health tend to fade. I like the way that Dr. Seuss expresses it, one of my favorite philosophers and scholars. Dr. Seuss wrote, How did it get so late so soon? It's light before it's afternoon. December is here before it's June. My, how the time has flown. How did it get so late so soon? That's a question that, again, as we grow older, we might kind of shake our heads and ask ourselves, how did all this happen so quickly? Where has time flown? And it got so late so soon. Psalm 90 is another passage that expresses this passing of time and puts it in perspective. Psalm 90. We'll drop down and pick it up in verse 9. Psalm 90. This is a psalm that's written by Moses. It says in the title at the beginning of the psalm. He emphasizes much early on about the experience that Israel had in the wilderness and the punishment that they endured while they were in the wilderness. But I want to drop down, as I said, to verse 9. It says, "For all our days have passed away in your wrath. We finish our years like a sigh." Now, he's writing about that generation of Israelites who lived in the wilderness for 40 years. And they were, in a sense, condemned to live there until they passed, and then the next generation would go on into the promised land. So it was a very difficult situation to be in. They knew that they were living until their life was ended, and then the next generation would inherit the land. Verse 10, "The days of our lives are 70 years, and if by reason of strength, they're 80. So life is very limited, is the point that he's making. This benchmark of 70 years probably refers to the lifespan of those who were wandering in the wilderness. It's not a hard and fast number, but it's a generalized number. If you look at, again, the rest of the psalm, you see that he's talking about Israel's wandering in the wilderness. But even today, 70 years is generally considered a full life. That is, until you get close to 70. Then you're hoping for 80 by reason of strength. But life, the point that's being made, is life is limited. Life is something that we need to understand and appreciate in its context, that there are limitations. There's a period of time that will end. That leads to verse 12. He says, "So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." Again, we touch on that importance of gaining wisdom as we live our lives. Other translations make it even more clear. The New Revised Standard says, "So teach us to count our days, that we may gain a wise heart." The New Living Translation says, "Teach us to make the most of our time, so that we may grow in wisdom." The Bible in Modern English puts it this way: "Teach us how short our life is, so that we may become wise." It helps us to put our life in perspective, to realize that the time we have is limited. Teach us, remind us, God, help us understand that life is precious, life is limited, and we need to learn to use it very carefully. Now, again, it's getting negative on us. We don't want to do that. Compare what is said here to what we find in Titus chapter 1, verse 2, where it says that God, who cannot lie, promised eternal life. Compare what we've read so far to what it says in Ephesians chapter 1, where we're told that it is God's good pleasure and His will that we be granted a place as sons in His eternal family. God's plan is not death. God's plan is life. But God's plan is for us to use life effectively now so that we can be part of that eternal kingdom. Jesus says in Luke 12, verse 32, "Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom." God is all about life. That's His plan. That's what He has for us. That's what He's going to share with those who use this life carefully. Because this life is temporary. This life is brief. But in it, we are preparing to receive that gift of eternal life. So let's get back to where I wanted to begin. What will we accomplish in the next, between now and the next Teen Speech Club meeting? It's a finite period of time. The phrase, "Let's teach us to number our days," is really a kind of a general sense of learning how to view life carefully. But I want to look at it, for now at least, very literally. Let's number the days. Again, the number of days between tomorrow and the next Teen Speech Club meeting is 145. So we'll ask, how will we use that time? Each day is likely to go by pretty slowly. But then it's going to be, and it's gone. We'll be at our next benchmark. It'll vanish like a vapor. So what will we have to show for what will happen in the next 145 days? Turn to Ephesians chapter 5, verse 16. We see a principle here that we can apply as we look ahead, as we give some thought to what we can accomplish in the coming 5 months. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 16. Paul writes in the previous verse to live carefully, not as a foolish person, but as a wise person. Verse 16, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Paul emphasizes the need to redeem time. The word redeem comes from a Greek word which means to take full advantage of every opportunity. To take full advantage of every opportunity. To work with urgency and intensity. It's easy to kind of take things easy if we're looking ahead and say, well, I've got 145 days before I have to give any answer for this period of time. Paul says, don't look at it that way. Take full advantage of every opportunity each day and work with urgency and intensity. We can focus, concentrate, and use this period of time wisely to take full advantage of every opportunity. Now, by the way, this lesson is not just for Teen Speech Club members. It's for all of us. We're all going to be regathered on November the 3rd, I hope. And we can look back and say, okay, what happened? What just happened? What did I accomplish? Benjamin Franklin said, You may delay, but time will not. We can put things off, but time continues. He also wrote that lost time is never found again. Lost time is gone. Each day is important and precious. So, what I'm suggesting then is the importance of looking ahead and setting goals that we can accomplish. 145 days sounds like a long time, but again, it's deceiving, because when it's past, it will seem like it was really short. All of us, at whatever stage of life we're in, can identify some important things that we would like to accomplish in the next 5 months. Things that we can do to make progress in our lives. Goal setting is a pretty familiar topic as well. There are lots of books, lots of articles on the topic of setting goals. I'm going to share with you, just for the closing few minutes, some points that are made in an article that's titled "The Five Golden Rules of Goal Setting." It's from a website called entrepreneur.com. Setting goals is an important matter in our lives. It can help us see where we want to be and how we're going to get there. If we just kind of drift along from day to day with just this vague idea that I want to get things done, I want to do better, I want to be better, then we're not likely to get very far. A goal gives us something specific to work toward. So we can set for ourselves goals that we can accomplish or work toward. And then when we get to the end of this block of time and we look back, we can see the progress that we're making. So let's review quickly these five golden rules that are outlined in this article. The first rule in setting a goal is to set a goal that motivates you. Set a goal that is meaningful and important to you. It's not what somebody else necessarily wants you to accomplish. Somebody else may have some good advice, but setting a goal in this context that we're talking about means to decide on something that is important to you so that you'll be motivated to work on it. Now, if you sit down and think about this, you probably can come up with 25 things you'd like to do, all of which are important to you. So as you set a goal, don't overwhelm yourself. Keep it simple. Write down what you would like to accomplish. Maybe your list will start with 25 items. Write them down, and write down why that each of those items is important to you. This is something I'd like to accomplish because, and you prioritize. Now, what you'll find if you put together a list like that, there may be some things you think, well, sounds good, but I don't know why I want to do that. So you cross it off the list. You refine your list to the point where there are specific items that you want to accomplish and why they're important to you. Then look at that list and prioritize it. What are the things that are most important and the things that you can accomplish, right, if you start on them? Now, as you write down this list of things you want to accomplish, you might have goals that are in different categories of your life. You may have spiritual goals. There may be things you'd like to study and understand better that are in God's Word. There may be some things you'd like to do to improve your life, to be more obedient, to be stronger as a Christian. Some goals you'd like to accomplish that are spiritual in nature. There may be some educational goals. You may decide that you should read a book each month for the next 5 months. You may choose a topic that you'd like to learn more about. You may decide you want to start taking piano lessons. You may decide you want to take a class during the summer. There are educational goals that you might have on your list. You might have a service-oriented goal. You might decide that it's important to you to take some of your time during the summer to spend it serving somebody else, to spend it caring for and showing attention to and helping somebody else with something that they need. There's a lot of satisfaction. But you know, sometimes those kind of things only happen if you decide that you're going to and then set a goal to accomplish it. One of your goals for this summer, next 5 months, ought to be to have fun. When we talk about these goal-setting principles, it sounds like everything's work. Everything's going to be, you know, all these things I have to do and got to accomplish, and I'm responsible. Yeah, but part of life also is pleasure, and God created us to enjoy life. One of the fruits of God's Spirit is joy. God doesn't intend for us just to be so serious and so worried and so concentrated that we never pause to enjoy the blessings he's given to us. So balance is always the key. But having a good time, enjoying the life that God has given to you, can be certainly a valid goal. So just some thoughts and ideas, something for you to consider. You make your list. You decide why each of them is important and necessary for you, and then you prioritize and choose one or two of those to really focus on. Don't try to do everything, but choose one or two, because we're talking for now about 5 months. So in 5 months, what are you going to be able to do? Second principle in this article is to set SMART goals. Set SMART goals. Now, SMART, in this case, is an acronym, okay? And we're going to go down the 5 points that he defines as being SMART goals. When you set a goal, the first element in this doing so, setting SMART goals, the first element is to be specific. When you set a goal, be specific. What is it you want to accomplish? What is it that you're going to do? Again, vague goals will generally not be accomplished. So be specific. That's the S in SMART. M is measurable. Choose something that you can measure the progress. Choose something where you can see that you're working toward the goal. Certainly, if it's specific, then it ought to be measurable. The third, the A in the SMART goals, choose a goal that is attainable. Something you can really accomplish. If you choose something that's beyond what you are going to be able to do, then that's going to be discouraging and you're not going to make progress toward it. To make it attainable, you may need to break a goal down into incremental steps. The longer range goal may require you to set some intermediate goals to get there. But make sure that you're striving to accomplish something that is attainable, something that's reasonable, something that you really can do. The R in SMART goals is relevant. Choose something that's relevant to you, meaningful to you, something that will be useful to you, something that you'll find satisfying to accomplish. Choose a goal that's relevant to you. And then the last part of SMART, the T in SMART goals, choose a goal that is time-bound. In other words, something that you can set a date. Okay, November the 3rd, 145 days from today, this is what I want to accomplish. And commit yourself to accomplishing it during that period of time. That's one way you make each day meaningful and successful along the way. Because each day you're working toward the conclusion. Now, maybe you have some even shorter term goals that you can accomplish in less time. Maybe you can line up a whole set of different intermediate goals between now and 5 months from now that you can work toward. But make sure that you have a schedule, a deadline for the goal that you set for yourself. So those are SMART goals. Goals that are specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-bound. The third point in this article about the five golden rules of goals, of setting goals, the third point is write down your goals. Write them down. Now, you may choose to write them down with a word processor. I think a lot of folks would choose a word processor for anything they want to write. I think, because I'm an old guy, that writing something down on paper is really a whole lot more meaningful than putting it in a text file. I got lots of text files. But writing something down forces you to use your mind in a different way and to write down your goal, specifically measurable, attainable, all the above thoughts about goals, can help it to become more real to you and something that you've given more thought to. Now, if you want to use a word processor, great. You know, start a file on your a note on your telephone or computer file, whatever, however you want to do it. But write it down in one way or another so that you make a specific and personal commitment, not just a vague desire. It might be good, if you're inclined, to keep a goal journal. If you're writing things down, you can write down what you plan to accomplish, and you also can keep track of the progress along the way. I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself a little bit, but writing things down as far as what you want to attain is going to be helpful. As you write it down, go back, make sure that it's a SMART goal, as we talked about, and a goal that was motivating and meaningful to you. Number four, the fourth golden rule, is develop a plan for accomplishing your goal. How are you going to get this done? What's it going to take to accomplish what I want to do or make progress toward in this period of time? How much time will it take to accomplish your goal? Are you going to have to do something every day, once a week? How often are you going to have to devote specific time to whatever this goal is you've chosen for yourself? And how does this goal fit into your life in general? How is it going to affect your schedule and what your life consists of, the activities you're involved in? Make sure that it fits so that you can, again, if you overschedule yourself, then you're going to get discouraged because you won't be making the progress that you want. So have a plan. When will you do what needs to be done? Writing out a plan or having a plan helps you to remember that you will not accomplish your goal all at once. A goal is something that takes time to accomplish. So you need to have then an approach that will allow you to make consistent progress. So think about how you're going to accomplish your goal. That's what I would call the creative step. Might take a little bit of brainstorming to figure out how you're going to get this done in the period of time that you've allotted for yourself. Develop a plan. And then the final point in this series of steps that are given in this article, the final point is to work the plan. If step four is the creative part of setting a goal, step five is the character part. Step five is actually doing what you've been giving thought to. If you've established a goal that's meaningful and important to you, if you've set it up as a SMART goal with all those criteria to meet that, to make it a SMART goal, if you've written it down, if you have a plan, this is where a lot of people kind of lose track, because that's when they kind of fades away. You haven't done anything yet. A lot of times people think that if they plan something, then it's accomplished. No. Until we get to step five, you haven't really done anything. You haven't really made any progress. A plan might be a good intention, but you know where the road leads, that is paved with good intentions. This will help you bring it down to your daily activities, to that day that goes so slow in some ways. Have a to-do list that will help you to accomplish something in that day toward attaining your goal. Pretty simple general principles about establishing and accomplishing goals in our lives. Now remember, along the way, there will be days that don't go so well. You're going to stumble and fall on occasion as you're working toward completing your goal. Sometimes you might want to, if you hit what looks like an obstacle, you may need to go back and rethink things and decide what it is you can and want to accomplish. You'll learn along the way. And perhaps your goal will change a bit. Now, if you get to the point where you're changing your goal every day because it was kind of hard, then that's not going to be very successful either. But remember that you're going to have to put effort in, because some days won't go so well. But don't give up. Don't give up. Again, if you have a goals journal, you can kind of record the way things have gone, and some of the good days and some of the days that weren't so successful. But keep focused on what it is you want to accomplish and continue to move forward. You know, even if we don't completely accomplish a goal in the next 145 days, we can at the very least make progress. We can be going forward toward accomplishing those things we want to do. One last thought: it might be good to have a goal buddy, someone you share your thoughts with, someone who can encourage you, remind you, help you brainstorm and think through to get around some of the obstacles, help you to be reminded of the importance and to encourage you to continue even if you're tired, even if you're a little bit sidetracked. Proverbs talk about how a friend, it gives the example of iron sharpening iron. And in general, that means that sometimes a good friend is going to be there to not just commiserate with you, but maybe to give you a little kick in that backside to help you remember to keep going, to remind you of what you want to accomplish and to share your progress with you. So remember, in general, that the days go slow, but the years, or in this case, the next 5 months, go fast. Between now and the next Teen Speech Club meeting, we'll have summer, we'll have the summer camps, we'll have the Feast of Tabernacles, we'll have the first couple of months of the next school year. It's a long enough stretch of time that there's a lot to look forward to, a lot to anticipate, a lot that we can enjoy. And I hope that when we come back together, we can look back together at a very productive and successful and meaningful 145 days.